You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a.
What more can I say?
R. Smith. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 308. On today's show, we're joined once again by the superlative Alex Wolf of Posting and Toasting to finish our discussion on the Knicks potentially trading back in the 2018 NBA draft and looking at some of the prospects that might be available in that range. On today's show, we discuss Kevin Knox and Zaire Smith. Before we start, just want to say shouts to Calvin. Stay strong, bud. Your dad reached out to me on Twitter, wanted me to say what's up. You might be a little bit embarrassed that, like, your dad asked, but you shouldn't be. He loves you. You know? That's something. You'll grow up and you'll be like, man, there's so many people whose dads don't love them. But your dad, he's looking out for you. So shouts to you, Calvin. I love you too, because you listen to Locked On Knicks. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
Part two of Trade Back a Palooza in the first installment of Trade Back a Palooza. We talked about if the Knicks should consider trading back. We both agreed, yes, they should consider it. We talked about potential trade partners, and we talked about two potential targets in the draft. In this year's draft, if the Knicks traded back in Lonnie Walker IV and Shai Gilgeous-Gorgeous Alexander. Today, we're going to finish up by talking about two other potential draft targets in this year's draft if the Knicks trade back. And those two targets, well, maybe we'll keep it a surprise. Actually, people will know by the episode description. Those two targets will be Kevin Knox and Zaire Smith. Who do you want to start with, Alex?
First off, I like that you thought you could pull a fast one on them until you realized that you weren't going to be able to pull a fast one on them. I'm keeping this a secret, but no, I can't. Ah, shit.
No, I can't.
I don't know who I'd rather talk about first. If I'm personally, based off where I think I have them ranked at this point, I'd probably say let's talk about Knox first to save okay. Zaire for last.
So it's interesting because I like Knox better than Zaire, and from what I've seen so far, he would be the one guy who I would seriously consider a worthy target if they traded back, and you could maybe talk me into drafting at 9, although I think there's enough difference between him and some of the guys available potentially at 9 that I'm not sure I would, but all right, let's start with Kevin. He is 18.8 years old, so he will be 19 this season. He was a freshman out of Kentucky. His combine measurements, 6'7 and 3/4 inches without shoes, 6'9 with shoes, just under 7 foot wingspan. He missed it by 1/4 inch. So fantastic size for a wing, which is what he figures to play in the NBA. 212 pounds, 5.95% body fat. Did not vertically leap at the combine like a coward. Okay. So.
Damn.
Yeah,
cowards.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're running wild out here, so we got to hold them accountable. As, what is it? Those who can do, those who can't teach, those who really can't criticize on podcasts, I think is how the...
That sounds about right. That sounds like a millennial stream of logic there.
It's a gritty reboot of that phrase for our times. But let's talk about Kevin Knox. First of all, I mean, we haven't done this yet. I think we're going to do an episode about just who has the best NBA names in this draft. And I gotta say, Kevin Knox just sounds like someone who might play in the NBA. So that's my...
Well, I mean, dude, if he puts it together on defense, you can start calling him Fort Knox.
I mean, you know? That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that with that name. Solid name. Kevin. We've already got an all-time great Kevin playing in the league right now. So it's got some pedigree in that name, front to back. But as a basketball player, like I said, really good size for a wing. What else do you think that Kevin Knox is doing well? And you can obviously talk about how that size might impact his style of play. But
yeah, so I may as well start with that. I mean, you know, he's definitely thin right now. He only weighs, did I write it down? I think it's like 212 pounds.
That's what they
like
measured him at the combine, yeah, 212.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously light for someone of that size. But if you look at him, he's got that same sort of Porzingis, Ntilikina look about him where you think, like, okay, all this guy needs is to get on, like, a 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 calorie a day diet and, you know, just be eating, like, raw protein all the time and doing lots of weightlifting, and he'll fill out real nice in the NBA.
And I would say he even looks a little bit thicker than those guys at their skinniest. But, I mean, you're not off. He's skinny, but he's got a great NBA frame, like, for sure.
He's probably at, like, rookie year Porzingis, but not, like, super thin Spain Porzingis. You know what I mean? That's probably where I'd put him.
I like that.
Body. But so, I mean, other than his physical attributes, which are good, and like, should he fill out, he could be sort of a perfect combo forward in today's NBA because he's lengthy. He could potentially get more muscular to be able to kind of keep up with fours, but he's definitely suited to be a three right now.
Yes. Great size for a three right now. And one thing that just sort of jumped out at me, the way he moves, I mean, I don't think it's fair to put this on him as a prospect, but he had a bunch of, like, kind of Euro steps in transition with his good length, where he reminded me a little bit of a baby Giannis. I think he's got
The first thing I noticed about this guy when I first started watching, when I was watching, like, highlight stuff, was I was like, this guy's, like, a demon in transition.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's just so good. Like, he has that perfect instinct of, like, when to release, you know, to get on the break. And so, like, he sees that rebound hit somebody's hand, and he just, like, releases for the other side immediately. And once that happens, he's so long that he takes really big strides, and he gets all the way down there so quick. And then when he gets there, as long as he's not being tentative, which is one of his detracting factors.
Yeah.
But as long as he's going up hard, he has pretty good body control, and he's a really good athlete. Like, he definitely can yam on somebody if he needs to.
And like you mentioned, he knows when to release. I think that also extends to the half court. I saw some sets where he just looks to be like a smart cutter. I think he's got a pretty good basketball IQ. I don't know if it's outstanding, but I think this guy's a basketball player. You know what I mean? Like, he's got athletic ability too, but I don't know. Like, I think he looked okay in the pick and roll as a ball handler from what I saw. He's got like some... an okay-looking shot, I thought. He had some good touch on some floaters, good touch and timing around the rim, like you said, in transition.
I thought his shooting form, similar to what we were talking about with Lonnie Walker on the last show, I actually think his shooting form is really nice. I mean, he's got a high release point. He goes pretty straight up and down. Everything about his shot seems pretty solid. Like, his mechanics don't need a lot of work, I don't think, based off my amateur assessment. Sure. But
He's also got a nice move in his arsenal already, which is a very modern NBA move, where he just moves laterally at the three-point line to shake a defender and then gets the open three. I saw him do that a bunch. And I don't know. I mean, that's obviously important and something the Knicks don't really... It's the anti-Courtney Lee who loves taking that step in. He does that sidestep pretty well, I think.
Now, some of it... One thing that I noticed that I didn't particularly like, and this is, I tried to watch like the better part of his play, and I found a couple like full Kentucky games on YouTube, so I watched that a little bit. And just from watching him, there's times on offense where I don't think he's like always engaged over there.
They just parked him in the corner sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes he seems parked in the corner, but other times it seems like he should maybe be doing something, but he's not. Like, he should be setting an off-ball screen or something.
Well,
it seemed like he didn't have very much interest in doing too many things that weren't involving him eventually getting the ball.
So I'll follow up on this. It's interesting that we're having this conversation now and that you and I are falling on this side of the fence, because it wasn't too long ago, a week or two ago, you, in the Posting and Toasting Slack, you recommended that I check out Knox. And I was just like, I don't really like him at all. Because I did watch a couple of games where I, you know, early on in the season, I knew he was one of these guys that were pegged to be around where the Knicks were drafting. I watched a couple games where he just sort of disappeared. I mean, like, he definitely had good games, but he was one of these guys, like you said, he didn't always seem like he brought it. And I don't know if that was the system or a motor issue or an attitude problem. I don't get the sense that he seems like he's got a bad tude. But I'm not sure what's behind it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But it's definitely a flag and cause for concern. I'm not saying it's the most major issue, but it's not a positive. That's for sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, the other potential thing to explain that is, and this is kind of actually a positive factor for him, is that he has the Kentucky factor going for him.
Yeah.
Which is that a lot of times at Kentucky, John Calipari, their coach, is very adamant about, I think, and I mean, it sounds weird to say because they win so much, but I think that the winning is almost a secondary thing to him, and he really sells these kids on the fact that he's going to get them ready for the NBA, and the way that he's going to do that is he's going to take them and he's going to take them out of their comfort zone and make them do things they're maybe not necessarily comfortable doing, and try to get them doing new things that'll turn into skills that translate to the NBA for them.
Right.
So I think maybe we saw some of that with Knox, because he was definitely, parts of his game were kind of raw, but you could see that he was also definitely a talented scorer.
Right.
But they didn't necessarily always use him as like a primary scoring option. A lot of times he was taking catch and shoot threes, and he was cutting and things of that nature, which I think were skills that Calipari was probably trying to help him develop to get him ready for the next level.
I want to talk about a couple of potential weaknesses that I saw, but before I do that, just want to remind people that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. Before we get back to the show, just got to talk about something a little bit more serious for a second. If you or a loved one lived in, worked in, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the September 11th attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available to you. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many victims recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act, which allows you to recover these benefits, has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but for anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast cancer. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. So to kind of continue on with a couple of weaknesses, which I'm not sure how big of an issue they are, but I think I mentioned before that I think he's got a nice floater. He's got a nice touch on his floater, but he seemed to settle for those floaters a lot of times when he could have maybe taken it harder to the hole. I was watching some highlights and wrote in all caps, "Take it to the hole, big man." But a lot of these guys have this issue too. I don't think that's the biggest deal, but he definitely, especially people who maybe need to fill out their frame a little bit. You know, he's not a bruiser just yet, but doesn't seem to be as aggressive. This might just be part of this like aggressiveness thing, which I'm not sure what's going on there. And maybe it's partially that I think he seemed just like, he's a good athlete clearly, but maybe a little slow. I don't know if that's fair because he's kind of a big guy, but both sort of in straight line situations and even defensively kind of moving side to side, I didn't think he was the quickest guy, even adjusting for his size. Did you have any thoughts on his speed and his quickness?
Yeah, I don't think he's fast in the traditional sense. Like if you put him on like a 40-yard dash, I don't know if he'd be super fast. But yeah. I will say I got the impression from watching him that he's good at using his length to simulate speed, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, like he can cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time based off his steps, which is hard for guys to keep up with, even if they're faster than him.
That's a good
point. You know, because if he can take one step and it takes, you know, if he got a guard switched on him or something, he could take one step and it takes that guard 1.5 steps just to keep up with that one step. Automatically, he's got a step on the guy now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think he's the sort of guy that uses that well. That said, I think you're right. I don't think he's necessarily fast in the conventional sense. Like, he could never do, and I mean, this is like the most absurd comparison, but he could never like turn on the jets like LeBron or something, you know, where right. When LeBron turns it on, he's like freaking Usain Bolt going down the side of the court. And, you know, you have no idea how he could possibly cover that much ground that quickly.
Right. But, and when we're talking about, you know, maybe trading back, if someone who, you know, is on the board still like a McCall who I've sort of fallen in love with, like, I think McCall is like definitely quicker than him. I think he's a faster guy. I think he's got more speed than some people think, even though he's not like the ultimate barn burner.
Yeah, but the thing to consider with McCall versus him, though, is that McCall is older. You know, McCall is more he's more grown into his adult body than Knox is. Like, Knox is one of the youngest players in this draft.
Right.
So that's something to consider with him. Because along with that not being bulky also comes with the fact that, like, it's not just his upper body that hasn't reached his full potential. He also hasn't reached his full potential with his lower body either, which means that
that's a good point,
that explosiveness with age and with working out and doing specific exercises to tune that up.
Yeah, I mean, to remind people, because we mentioned this at the top of the show, he's not 19 yet, Knox. He's still 18. I mean, I was 19 right when college started, and this guy just finished, you know, I was a little bit old for my grade, September baby. But, you know, this guy went his whole freshman year. He's not 19 yet. So definitely one of the younger guys. Along with that, you know, we talked about his shot looks pretty good. But from deep, it's not impressive yet. He shot 34% from three last year and 77% from the free throw line. So, okay. You know, but not amazing.
Yeah.
I don't care as much about results, especially someone this young. I think his shot looks pretty good, but the results aren't there yet. So it's more of a question mark.
Like, you definitely want to, I feel like at that age, you want to look more for the form being there.
Agreed.
than the percentages. Because you know that the percentages can come around. And no matter what, like, if he's shooting from college three anyway, he's going to have to in some way relearn how to shoot a three anyway once he hits the NBA, because you have to start learning how to shoot it from longer regardless.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll dust off this hoary old chestnut that I used in the Miles versus McCall two-parter. I mean, you are drafting these guys for what you think they're going to grow into. No one is drafting someone being like, yeah, I'm happy with what you are now. You don't need to improve. So that's a huge consideration.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that the only thing that we haven't really touched on yet is just his defense, which I think is one of those things where it definitely is not great yet. I mean, I wouldn't even say for his relatively considerable length and size that he really, like, he only averaged, I want to say, 0.3 blocks per game last year.
Okay.
Which is, like, not great at all.
No.
For someone who he played a lot of, like, four for Kentucky, you mm-hmm. know, he played a lot at the power forward ish you know, you can't really put a label on it now, but you got the impression that he was sort of their four man out there, and he didn't really do much on the defensive end with blocks, so he's not much of a rim protector. He also didn't get very many steals, which maybe alludes to that speed and basketball IQ sort of thing that we were looking mm-hmm. at. But he's another one of those guys, too. Like, if you're drafting him to the Knicks, like, if they would take him, you probably figure that Fizdale has somewhat of a defensive reputation. And also a reputation for, well, I don't know. I don't know if he really has earned such a reputation yet with 1.5, not even 1.5 seasons under his belt. But the impression with him is that he's kind of a player's coach that has a way of jiving with these guys. So you would hope that he could sort of teach Knox how to play defense, at least passably, given his considerable physical gifts.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. One final sort of thing for me, the last thing that I sort of noticed was a little bit of a sloppy dribbler. A little high, a little loose. Again, he's young, but to use someone like Mikal again. So Knox had a 14% turnover percentage this year. Mikal Bridges had a 9.1% turnover percentage. Last year, though, Mikal Bridges had a 15% turnover percentage. The thing that I just want to like bring up is that you hope these guys can improve, but you don't know if you can. And if you're looking at a Mikal and trying to find the positive there, he did improve. You know what I mean? So, and they had almost identical usage percentages this year. It was a 24% for Mikal and 23% for Knox. So, it's not, doesn't mean that he won't get better at his handle, but he does have work to do. I think there.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, but any 18-year-old,
of course,
19-year-old basketball player does. You know, I think that though, if you take Knox, you're not going to be expecting him to come in his rookie year and do what a guy like Mikal could do.
Yes.
Which is Mikal probably can be a solid role player from the first game that he steps on an NBA floor, whereas Knox, I think you're going to have to be patient. I almost look at Knox kind of like obviously he's not quite as high level of a prospect, but physically and his game to a degree reminds me a little bit of Brandon Ingram, where like, you know, his first year he's probably going to struggle a little bit because of his size, you know, and his weight and everything. Yeah. But if you give him some time to figure it out, he'll hopefully start to put it together and become like a plus player.
I mean, I might need to watch some Ingram tape, but I feel like he's even thicker than Ingram is right now.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, Ingram was like totally anorexic his first year. I mean, he was like skin and bones, man.
Yeah.
But this year he put on enough meat that he's like not quite to where Kevin Durant is now, but you know, he was at least like big enough, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, to me, I really like Knox's upside. I feel like he is pretty similar to Mikal. He's a little bit taller, but I think he's clearly inferior, at least right now. Maybe not when you talk about his upside, but where they are right now, he's a ways behind him, but he's a couple years behind him. But like, I feel like he's close enough that he's someone that he duplicates a lot of what I like in Mikal, like to a lesser extent so far. That if they could get another first round pick, like let's say next year in the top 10, I would like love drafting him. I would be totally fine with it if they like also got Phoenix's their first round pick next year. And I'm kind of knocking on wood that they don't improve that much, especially if they don't get Doncic. Like, I don't think Ayton's the guy who's going to push them into the playoffs next year. I could be wrong about that, but like that's the kind of situation where I'd be like, all right, we're trading back for Phoenix this year. We're getting Knox, and we're getting their pick next year. Like, that I could live with, and I think would be a pretty good haul. I mean, do you think that would be something that you'd be okay with?
I would definitely be cool with that, and I'll tell you my, like, sort of hot-takey trade that I would for sure do
if it was
on the table. If, and I mean, we talked about this on the last show with the Clippers. They own picks 12 and 13. If you would tell me that the Knicks could trade the ninth pick and pick 36, the second round pick, and get back the 12 and 13 and take Knox, and I don't want to say any one of the three, I would definitely prefer Lonnie Walker or Zaire Smith, who we're about to talk about. Mm-hmm. But if you could tell me that the Knicks could get those two guys and trade the two picks that they already have, I would probably say yes to that in a heartbeat.
It's interesting. Like I said, I found myself kind of falling in love with Mikal, but I am reasonable enough to know that I don't fully trust myself.
Yeah.
And I don't, you just start like, I don't know what it is that like clicks in you sometimes, but you know, you just reach that sort of tipping point where you're like, this is my guy. And it's based in some reason, but there's a little bit of magic in there too, where you just decide that
I have no problems with that. I went through the same thing last year, like, because we were in sort of a similar spot last year where there was so many guys that were probably going to be available when the Knicks picked. And, I mean, I hate what it's become now because he's constantly compared to Ntilikina, but like I was totally on team Dennis Smith.
Yeah.
And to this day, I still would have probably taken him there. You know, in the same time, knowing what I knew then, I would still probably take Dennis Smith. And I think we all would have been fine with him this year had they taken him. But
I love Frank, but I hear you.
You hit a certain point where you just find your guy, and it's just like, this is the guy that I now want to see in the Knicks uniform. And I'm like already like, you know, plotting out in my head what he's going to look like next to, you know, Ntilikina and Porzingis and all them. And
Before we move on to Zaire Smith, I've always been sort of curious, like in this situation, it seems really complicated, the timing of when you make the trade. Like, do you have to, if you're the Knicks, you probably can't make a trade. Like, even if it is for 12 and 13, do you make that trade before knowing what players are available? Or do you have to kind of wait till draft night and be like, okay, now that I know they can get our guys, we'll make this trade. But then, do you have to then try to draft hoping that you know the team you're trading down for wants? Like, do you have to... Like, how much can you actually do this ahead of time, or would it have to be completely on the fly?
No, I feel like to a certain degree it would be on the fly, but they're already making calls now, I guarantee you.
I know they are, but let's say you're the Knicks, and you know that the guy you're trying to trade down for, the team you're trying to trade down for, you know they want whoever at number 9, but maybe you wouldn't pick them. Do you pick them not knowing that who you want is going to be available? Or do you know there's enough of a tier that you're like fine doing it? You know what I mean?
I think you just play a game of basketball chicken with them is essentially what it comes down to. Mm. You say like, so if it's the Clippers and you know the Clippers are like you've already had discussions. So right now the Knicks are probably talking to teams like the Clippers and being like, hey, if let's say it was Trae Young, I feel like he's a guy that people would reasonably want to trade up to 9 with the Knicks for if they felt strong about it. So you say to the Clippers on the phone, you know, now, like, hey, if Trae Young was on the board when we're picking a 9, would you guys potentially give us 12 and 13? And they'll probably give you like a hard maybe, but maybe like tell you that they're leaning towards yes.
Right.
Then when draft night comes around, then, okay, now the tricky situation comes up where Trae Young's available to you at 9, but also maybe Mikal Bridges is, and you're really into Mikal Bridges. So now you have to call them and make it sound like, no matter what, you're going to take Trae Young, and they're screwed if they don't trade with you, is basically what it would come down to, I think.
If Bridges and Young are both available, I'm going to have a brain aneurysm.
Oh, I know. We're going to have to like go to your apartment and find you. And,
you know, I'm going to like forget who I am and go into a fugue state and wander around New Mexico naked. I just like, have you seen Breaking Bad? You haven't. You have.
Yeah, I have. I'm totally up on Breaking.
All right. but yeah, it's just like, because Trae Young just seems like exactly the kind of guy who like you'd have to pull the trigger, even though we're gonna have a whole episode on that. But I'm gonna lose my mind if they have to choose between one of those two. Oh, okay. I want to talk about
the initial trauma there.
Just thinking about it, just considering that could be real took a couple months off my life.
Just think about it real hard once a day for 10 minutes, and then you'll be prepared for if it happens
on draft day. Yeah, I really do need to. I want to talk about Zaire Smith. Just first, I want to remind everyone that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire world. Zaire Smith, he is 18.9 years old, so he will be 19 this season. He's a freshman out of Texas Tech. Combine measurements: 6'2¾" without shoes, 6'4" with shoes, just under a 6'10" wingspan, 198.6 pounds with 6.05% body fat, and a 41.5-inch vertical leap. So, disappointing height when people were talking about him potentially being a wing. Outstanding wingspan for that height, though. And an incredible leaper by the vertical leap metric, which I think also is bared out in tape.
Yes. So, I mean, the first thing with him is that he's a freaking highlight factory. Like,
I mean,
the guy just every every single highlight of him is like just a killer alley-oop or something.
Ridiculous, like 360 in-game dunks. Just Google his dunks. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, he did this one. I actually saw one that... So the 360 one that you just mentioned was the one that got him famous during the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was watching one of his highlight films earlier, there was one from way earlier in the season that was ridiculous. He was like running full speed down the court, and someone threw him like a half-assed lob from like past the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
And he somehow, like while going full speed, managed to like reach back, grab the ball, and dunk it like while going at full running speed. And it was like also a reverse. It was just insane. It was like,
yeah, the coolest. It made no sense. I watched that one. Yeah, I watched that one you were talking about, and you're just like, what? It's one of those ones where it's almost like the Dwight Howard putting a sticker on the top of the backboard, but probably cooler. Where the first time you see it, you like don't even understand it. You're like, wait a minute.
You don't even know what you're looking at. Yeah. It's like
you don't have a framework to like put it into. What is this?
Yeah, and I mean that was like in his first like three games. I'm actually watching it right now because I couldn't help it. Oh God, it's so awesome. For the listeners, if you go onto YouTube and you search Zaire Smith, and then you pull up Frankie Vision is like the MVP this year since Draft Express isn't around anymore.
He's stepping up.
You go to Frankie Vision's like full season highlight film for him, and it's like the second highlight. It is just like, it is mind-numbingly cool how good this dunk was. Anyway, so now that I'm done,
fanboying.
Getting off to that. So in a way, he sort of reminds me, and I looked up the stats and it sort of bears out, he kind of reminds me of that exactly.
Yo, I just watched that dunk again. It's ridiculous. He's like falling over backwards one-handed and dunks it sideways somehow. That's insane.
Dude, it was... it's like one of the top five coolest in-game dunks I think I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
It's just insane.
Wow.
Like, and he like falls down like into the stanchion afterwards.
Yeah.
Just, ugh.
He winds up like 7 feet behind the basket at the end of it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Need a cigarette.
He kind of reminds me of Zach LaVine coming out of college. Like, sure. Mega, mega, mega freak athlete. But unlike Zach LaVine, who was built kind of thin, he's built like a linebacker. Like, this dude is like really built for someone who's a freshman in college. You know, he was like, we were talking on the last show again about Lonnie Walker. I feel like if you took Lonnie Walker and like leveled him up, he would be Zaire Smith probably. Just freak athlete. He honestly should get a look from the Knicks at 9, regardless of anything else, even if they that. I really think that he deserves at least a look there.
I just want to say this off the bat because it's going to inform my thinking as we talk about strengths and weaknesses. But I can't shake the feeling, even despite these highlight dunks and everything. It feels like to me the Zaire Smith movement is almost like this reach at trying to specifically find the next Donovan Mitchell. And I know this is sort of the gambler's fallacy territory, but I can't shake the feeling that what are the odds that that exact sort of outcome happens 2 years in a row, where there's this guy who's a little bit unheralded, who is a really great athlete, falls to around 10 or a little bit later, and winds up being the best player in the draft. Like, I feel like the Zaire Smith movement is people trying to make Fetch and or Donovan Mitchell happen for a second year in a row. Like, I can't kind of shake that.
Yeah, I don't know for sure if that's the case, if teams are really looking for that next Donovan Mitchell and are so desperate to find it. But I do feel like there's definitely a sort of thing that happens in the league when that does happen, is that, you know, Donovan Mitchell was picked at, it was pick 13 last year, right?
12, I think.
12, 13, yeah, whatever. Post 10th pick, and now everybody's going to think, oh, there's got to be another one of those diamonds in the rough sitting out there somewhere. And Smith might be
right,
that
by
guy,
the way.
But
it's 13.
What's that?
You were right, by the
13,
way.
13, okay. Yeah. So, and but Smith might be that guy. I mean, I don't know. I feel like he's going to need more time to season than Mitchell did. Like, Mitchell came from Louisville, which is another one of those programs that does a really good job of getting kids ready for the NBA. I don't really know Texas Tech's track record. Clearly not that great if I can't even, like, name somebody off the top of my head that came from Texas Tech. But ultimately, like, just looking at his tape, he's definitely not – he's not as talented of a ball handler as Mitchell, and he's definitely not as clean of a shooter as Mitchell and, like, as much of a natural scorer right now. But you could also argue that, I mean, even if you break him from that mold of trying to become the next Donovan Mitchell or whatever, I don't even think they necessarily play the same position. Like, Mitchell, I think, is more of a point guard shooting guard because of the way that he plays. Like, he's more of a combo guard. And I think that Smith is going to be more of a shooting guard, small forward.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, you bring this up, and this is, I'm glad you did. I heard him mentioned as more of a wing kind of heading into the combine, and then his measurements came out, and he's got okay wingspan for that. But his height his height's a concern. I mean, you think he can play a capable three in the NBA?
I actually think he can, just because, one, he seems to have an unlimited motor, which pays huge dividends. But two, I think that he's more used to playing like someone bigger than himself. Like, so I said in the last show when we were talking about Lonnie Walker, I was trying to watch all the combine videos of these guys where they did the interviews. And Zaire Smith did one. And first off, he seems like a really sweet kid. Like, he's just my one worry with him is that I think he would get, like, annihilated by the New York media because he's just, like, this sweet Southern kid who's, like, very soft-spoken. Like, every question at, or every answer to every question is like, you know, I just work hard, you know. And
does he say sir and ma'am?
No, he doesn't. He's okay, not good. Quite that
good.
But no, but he's, like, he's just very, like, he's got a little bit of a twang to him, and he's just, like, very soft-spoken. It's very cute, but
you're talking to me into him. I don't know if that's legitimate, but yeah.
But my big thing during that interview that came out that really popped to me was, and it made a lot of sense when you watch how he plays, is that when he was in high school, they didn't play him the position that he would end up being in college and what he'll end up being in the NBA. He used to play as a center because, like, in high school, when you're 6'4 with a 6'10 wingspan, that's freaking huge for, like, normal people.
Right.
So he apparently played a lot of power forward and center in high school, so I think he still has a lot of that mentality.
But so here's my question, though. I mean, if he does have to spend significant minutes at two, whether or not he's a tweener, but let's assume that he's spending a decent amount of chunk at two. I think that's pretty fair, right? That's probably in his cards. Does he have two skills? And if not, because obviously we you know, maybe I've lost a little bit of sight in this as I've talked about some of these trade back guys, but do you think he can develop those skills? I mean, because when I watched him play, I think some weaknesses that people pointed out, I think, bore out in watching were not really taking guys off the dribble that much. A lot of his dunks were kind of lobs and transition kind of things. His handle was not that good, a little sloppy for someone that short. You kind of think of them as usually having tighter handles. And he's a good spot-up shooter, but someone pointed this out and I noticed it. He shoots on the way down off the dribble, which I think could be corrected, but it is odd and makes me uncomfortable projecting him to be a two guard. But
yeah, I am. So actually his jumper, like his jumper form is one thing that I'm like for sure, worried about to a degree. There was that workout video that everybody was like freaking out over when he was, it came out, I don't know, I want to say maybe a week or two ago, and I think Jonathan Givney tweeted it. Somebody did. I think
the
it was one
Express
of the
guy.
Express guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one of those two, either him or Mike Schmitz. But one of them tweeted it out and was, like, very glowing about it. But when I was watching it, it seemed like he was taking, like, corner threes, but it seemed like every one that he was taking, he was catching it, like, at his midsection and almost doing, like, a full squat, like down and then coming up into his motion rather than staying relatively straight up and down and just going up with it, which is definitely worrisome because if you take too long to set up your jumper in the NBA, like, you're screwed.
Yeah.
That said, though, like, he gets high enough when he jumps, because he's obviously he's got that 41.5 inch vertical.
Uh-huh.
He gets high enough that I think he could shoot over defenders, even ones that are taller than him. That's a bit of a concern, but one that I think could be fixed. At least I certainly hope so.
I want to say this about if you're talking about projecting these guys, a lot of this, it's a fool's errand. It's like sort of impossible to know, but guys also do give off signs one way or the other, and he's given off good signs as someone who can improve, because just watching him on the court, he's one of these guys who just never gives up on a play. Hard worker, strong motor. I've only heard good things about how he is off the court. Like, he seems like the kind of guy who's going to really actively try to improve. You know, as much as I can say that, not watching him practice or knowing what he's like in the gym or any of that. But it seems reasonable to project him to you know, care about his weaknesses and to work on them.
Yeah. No, definitely. And like I said, I got the impression watching the interview with him that he has a pretty good head on his shoulders too, which is always important when you're trying to project how guys are going to do at the next level as far as
as far as
having that drive to improve and not just kind of being satisfied with making it to the NBA, which you see with some guys. You know, you don't like to see it in anybody, but there's definitely some players that they get to the NBA and they say, you know what, I made it. Like, I'm good enough for the NBA and that's it. And the only guys that end up getting better and progressing in the NBA are the ones that never are satisfied with anything in their game and constantly are trying to fix it.
Just really you just reminded me of myself in college when I was like, well, I'm here now. I don't really need to do anything, right?
I did that too. It must be a common trait amongst the Knicks podcasters.
Oh my god, that hit way too close to home. I was like, oh shit, he's describing me. I don't know if I have too much of a read on his defense, but I'll say this, because I have become mildly obsessed with two-way players, just because I think that your offense can be so good that your defense is less important. But then when they released the all-defense team this year, I was like, for some reason, it just really clicked with me. I mean, I've always known this, but I was like, man, these are all just the best players in the league. Like, it's not just, like, these specialists. Like, you really want to look for someone who can do both. Like, it's the rare guy who's just so good on offense that, you know, it doesn't really matter what his defense is like. And I will say that a good sign for him that I at least noticed was that he seems to get his hands on the ball a lot on defense. Like, he's looking at the passing lanes. He's kind of sticking out those mitts using his long wingspan. He seems active there.
Yeah, he for sure seems like an active defender. I think that you could really make the case that he looks like he that would be the one thing that would translate first for him in the NBA, other than like the dunking and the athleticism, right, obviously, would be the defense. Like, I think his defense is really, really pretty good. I mean, you can only read so much in, so I'm looking on like Sports Reference, the college version of Basketball Reference, and his O rating there, and I mean, that's, they do it, they don't do it the actual box score way, they do it the way where it's like adjusted or whatever, and
the way I hate
it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't like it either, but
it's his, so convoluted, really nice. There are like 18 equations to calculate the O rating. It's so insane, but anyway.
Yeah, well, he has like a 30-point differential, though, which is like really high. Like, that's good enough to reasonably say that he's probably a pretty plus defender, or at least he was in college.
Yeah,
and his steal numbers are actually pretty good, too. I mean, he averaged over one per game. He averaged over one block, and I will say, like, when I was watching, obviously they're highlights, so you can't...
Was it on ball or weak side stuff?
He did some weak side. I think I saw one or two on ball. I mean, he definitely had some really like high, like come from behind, like not like chase down, but like there was a big in the paint that thought that he was going to eat, and he just like stuffed it right out of his hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way Frankie works sometimes. Every once in a while, someone sort of like blows by him, but he's like right there. He's like, I have huge arms, and I'm just going to swat you.
But like in that respect, and a lot of people, I mean. Now I'm bringing it back to the same guy that I was trying to make a case that maybe you don't have to compare him to him, but a lot of people made the comparison with Donovan Mitchell, and then in turn made the comparison to Dwayne Wade, that like when you're that size, when you're that size that they are and you have that length, like if you can block shots, which Wade used to be like a phenomenal shot blocker. I mean,
he's probably the best shot blocking two of all time, right? Is that
probably
his rep anyway, for sure.
Yeah, and Smith definitely, like, on defense shows some of that. Like, he's got really good instincts for when to get after the ball, and he can jump so high that he can use his length to his full advantage. I think he'd be really good on defense in the NBA. And that's why I think he can maybe keep up with threes as well. So, like, if you threw him in a lineup out there, if you put like Ntilikina, him, and Tim Hardaway out there as your three guard lineup, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, I think that between him and Hardaway, they could handle opposing threes.
Comparing him to Wade was a quick way into my heart, because I obviously hate the Heat, but Wade was like the guy from the past 20 years that I watched him in college. That's not exactly right, but, and I was just like, that guy's a superstar. There's no way he's not.
Yeah.
I don't know that I see it the same with Smith, but I mean, you're not saying that he's going to be Wade either, so that's a little unfair. But just even that comparison.
No, I'm just saying, like, there's shades there. You know
yeah,
what
no,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
for sure, of course.
You could see certain things where you're like, man, like, this is, you don't often see from a guy who projects to be, like, a shooting guard, maybe small forward, like, so, the ability to average over a block per game.
The thing to me is, like, if we're going to draft someone, he's got a good wingspan, but he's small. I'm just scared of his skill set given his height. Like, if we draft someone 6'2", to me, and I just talked about how important defense is, I am a man full of contradictions, but Trae Young, that's someone who, if they're that small, I want someone who can kind of severely warp the floor on offense the way they can.
Yeah, but he's not, like, super small, though. You know, he's, like, he's prototypical two-guard size. He's a little small for
a wing. I guess you're right. I keep looking at the in-shoes thing. And this no-shoes shit is really throwing me.
No, only look at in-shoes, man. He's going to be playing in shoes all the time. He's never going to play barefoot. So
6'4", fair enough. I'm not saying you're wrong, but why is he a good fit for the Knicks? Like, given that everyone talks about, you know, we want wings first and foremost, but we also want BPA, blah, blah, blah. Like, why do you think that Zaire Smith is even someone who they should consider at the 9?
Well, I think he just sort of... And I mean, look, I'm not, like, advocating that they should for sure take him at 9. I just think for sure, like, he deserves consideration. He matches up with all the things that – all the buzzwords that they keep going for. He's got high motor. He is, from what it seems like, really good on defense. A thing that I hadn't touched on yet, he's for a guard slash maybe small three-man. He's a really good rebounder. And really, really crashes the offensive glass well, especially looking for putbacks, which is...
I hate offensive rebounds. That's my new thing.
It's not even a real stat. No, I don't know.
It is overvalued, though. I'd rather you be a good defensive rebounder than offensive rebounder. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I think that's
but
fair.
So,
yeah,
so anyway. He crashes the offensive glass. He's pretty good on defensive glass, from what I can tell as well. But he's got a good wingspan. He's a phenomenal athlete. So, I mean... Yeah. They keep talking about, so I'm actually, it's funny, I'm writing a thing right now about Kevin Knox, which I'm hoping to be done within a week or so, just kind of like a know the prospect thing for posting and toasting, read posting and toasting. Yeah. Basically I was trying to dissect like what Perry and Mills have kind of been saying that they want out of a player that they would draft, and it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, Mills at one point said flat out, like, we want to draft a wing player. Like, that's what we hope to come out of the draft with.
Yeah.
Which, if that's the case, they'd probably for sure want to take one of the two Bridges. But then in multiple interviews since then, Perry has said that he's like, we just want to take, like, we're not in a position to really be picky. We just want to take the best player possible. Whatever player we think is going to be the best player is who we should take, and we'll figure out the rest later, is essentially what he's been saying.
Right.
So if that's the case, I mean, if you're not like dead set locked into a wing player, and if they scout Zaire, and with their, I think, like, formidable scouting prowess that they've shown the last few years, if he comes up as like the guy, take him. Like, screw it, man. Like, you'll figure it out if he's really that good.
I mean, I agree with that wholehearted, to be honest. I don't know why I said it that way. Even though you're an idiot, I swear I believe. I completely agree with you. I feel a certain way about these guys, but these guys have devoted infinitely more time and resources, hopefully, to looking into this than I have, and they've got. I think I know what I'm looking at, but I think the Knicks do too. The one thing they've done well over the years, like even through back the Isaiah years, is largely scout well in the draft. I do believe that if they identify any position that they think is by far BPA, that they should just go for it, and I'd be okay with it. When I look at some of these guys, I have a hard time believing that they would be BPA. Like, by far, in order to duplicate some positions that they're a little bit deep at. But then again, all I really believe in for this team is KP and Frank. Like, that's it. I like Timmy. Like, I think he's, a nice player. I don't think he should in any way influence who you draft. If you think it's a two-guard, you should draft him. And even Frank, we've talked about this. I think he's going to be a great player. But he might be one of these guys who just kind of, is an initiator at the two or the three or whatever. Like, he doesn't have to necessarily play that point guard role. I think there's some issues there where you might lose some benefits if he's not your primary point guard. But whatever, if it's someone who they identify as potentially great, I do think they're at a spot. Even KP, the one thing I found myself thinking is that I would hate if they drafted a big, to be honest. But
yeah,
I just don't see that kind of... Just because of the way the game is going, more than anything, it's not even about who they have. Unless you're one of these kind of unicorn-esque bigs, which I don't really see as much, I don't really like it. Only for what I want to play as.
I've become increasingly frosty on Wendell Carter Jr. for that reason. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been mocked to the Knicks in a lot of mock drafts, and there's a lot of talk that he could potentially hit the 9th pick. And there's, I don't know, man, it does scare me a little bit to think that, you could potentially be throwing him and Porzingis out there and you have like the dinosaur lineup, and I don't know for sure that that's the way to go, but
we'll have a full episode on him and probably someone else. But
but I mean, don't get it twisted. Like, I don't think that Zaire Smith is like, for you and the listeners, I don't think that he's like the guy for sure. Uh-huh. Probably if you were to ask me who my guy I would draft today would be, I would say Mikal Bridges, and then probably second place would be anybody that would fall if someone was overdrafted. So
like a Porter or a Young?
Like a Porter, maybe a Trey Young, or like even, I don't think it's going to happen because it sounds like Dallas is really infatuated with him, but like Bamba, I'd give it a shot with.
And there was the rumor today that Bamba is highly coveted by the Celtics, which I hate that it made me think this, but I was like, huh, am I missing something? Because I don't know. I don't know about him.
I think he's all right. I mean, I think it's just tantalizing because he's so physically huge.
His arms touch the floor when he's standing. It's like,
he's like 7 feet with like an 8 foot wingspan. It's insane. You look at his arms, and it looks like someone just fucked around with.
Can't believe that he can learn how to control those things. Like, they're too long.
Yeah.
What do you do with all that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, but he uses it really well. And I mean, he can like dunk without even jumping. It's freaking nuts.
And he's from Harlem, so go like that.
Yeah. But either way, like, whoever would fall would probably be my second choice behind Mikal, and then maybe Miles Bridges after that. I mean, that's probably my board, but
yeah.
I think Smith looks really good. I really do think there's a chance he could be, like, an actual star.
I will say this, kind of like with Knox, although I would prefer Knox, if the Knicks traded back in a way that netted them a really nice asset in addition to this, he's someone that I'd be happy with them drafting, like, 14th or whatever,
For sure. If they traded back and took him at 14, I'd be, like, crazy excited.
But
that'd be awesome.
But with the people who we expect on the board to be on the board, personally, I would be a little bit upset if they didn't draft one of those guys, because I think they're for me a tier above, at least maybe two. But that's a little bit of a stretch. But I like
understand where you're coming from. I get it. Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, it's tough. It's a tough thing to think about, like would you potentially want to like fuck up and pass on a dude that, could have that becomes an all-star for someone else and you get stuck with someone who busts or something like that. That's like the greatest fear.
Yeah.
And it's whereas, just... like, if you draft the guy that you were supposed to draft in that spot, and maybe he doesn't pan out, like with Frank versus Donovan Mitchell, like, you don't feel any regret over that because nobody really saw that coming.
No.
But if you think that you're trading back to get the next Donovan Mitchell and you don't take him, and then the guy that goes at your spot turns into like a 5-time All-Star, then that sucks. Like, then you're the asshole.
Yeah. The only reason, like, I like it more than I normally would, because normally I am just sort of averse to this sort of thing, is that the Knicks just should not be in a rush. In my, you know, like I would, and it would make me feel good about them that they're taking it slow, because that's a taking it slow move if you do that. So that kind of makes me like it a little bit more than I normally would. But given who I think will be available, not my top choice. I could talk myself into two of these guys that we've mentioned today if the cards fell in a favorable way with some of the other assets that they might bring in. So
yeah.
Okay. Whew. Part two in the books.
Marathon.
Yeah. Alex, I want to thank you so much for joining me. You were really helpful as we talked through these scenarios and these players. Where can the people find you online?
Well, first off, I'm always happy to come here.
Oh, thank
Just
you.
Bring me back anytime. Just keep, you know, change the sheets and, you know, I'll be good.
I know what you want. Change the sheets. I like that a lot. You just want to knock Schwinny off the perch. I don't know. Are you who has more appearances at this point? It's close.
I think I definitely still have more appearances.
You got a head start. Yeah. That's
yeah. True. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think I've got the most appearances, period. I think I might be in the lead.
I think you do, and I think it would rankle him for you to always be above him, so no matter what, let's keep you one above Schwinny.
Okay, so Schwinny comes on, and he does one episode. I'll come on that same week and do an episode also.
Even just for, like, we could start bringing you on for 2 minutes just to annoy him. So like, that doesn't count.
Bring me on at the beginning of his episode.
I love all of my guests. But yeah.
Anyway, so I'm on Twitter at the Alex Wolf, the Alex WOLFE, and you can read me on Posting and Toasting. Hopefully, I'll have some stuff coming out soon. And read everybody on Posting and Toasting because it's the best Knicks blog on the planet.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
You got it, James. Later.
All right, that's it. That's it for us for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. Thanks so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes, subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Tell your notary publics about Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spray into your pets if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. And take that for data. See you guys in the next Locked On Knicks. Peace!